Hello, and welcome to another episode of Artifacts. If you are new to this podcast, I am your host, Rachel Wilson. My goal is to provide listeners with a brief blast of history and/or science that offers background information and answers questions. It is my hope that listening stirs up great conversation for kids, families, and adults too. I also hope listening motivates you to chase after what you're curious about. If you would like to leave me comments, ask a question, or have an idea of a topic you would like to hear about, feel free to drop me a line at artifactspodcast@gmail.com. For more information about this episode, including a list of sources, please visit artifactspodcasthome.wordpress.com. Today is July 15th. The heat, the humidity has set in, and the cicadas are singing, and this is about the time of summer that is bittersweet for me. I love high summer, but I'm also feeling a little bit like nervousness. We're on the backside of summer, we're running out of days, and the stores are really not helping my cause. Every store that I've been in lately has got their back-to-school products out, along with the class list of supplies. So although I'm really not ready to start thinking about those supplies yet, I did want to answer a student's question. Actually, she had a few questions. So this episode's artifact is the pencil. So I'm going to answer how long they've been around, why we call it lead if it's actually made of graphite. What is graphite? What kind of wood is surrounding the lead? Can you get lead poisoning from a pencil? And what's that metal thingy called? So to start off, pencils were certainly not the first writing or marking utensil, but today we are focusing on the tool that's found in every classroom. The word pencil comes from the Latin pensilis, which means little tail. Before there were pencils, there was the metal stylus, which was used to scratch a wax-coated tablet, and those metal styluses were made from lead. They scratched wood, called codex, which is the Latin word for tree trunk. So this tree trunk, this piece of wood, was wax-coated, and it was the stylus carving into the wax that created the first ancient form of what we call a book. What I noticed about it, though, is you really can only cut into it with angular cuts. You're not going to get any kind of pretty scroll work with it. So next, there was the slate or chalk pencils that were used throughout Europe and in America, even into the late 1700s. And I can imagine that part of that transformation was, if you look at codex, it's wax, it's not going to be easy for you to erase a mistake that you've made. If you think about chalk on the chalkboard or on the little slates, you can wipe away today's lesson in math and put the next one on tomorrow. So it was the slate and chalk pencils along with goose quills and pens. The evidence of the earliest wooden pencils that match closely to what we use today were described in a 1565 book by Conrad Gessner, who wrote, quote, "The stylus shown below is made for writing from a sort of lead which I have heard the English call antimony, shaved to a point and inserted into a wooden handle." Just as a side note, these early pencils did not have erasers the way our number two does today. Instead, ready, people used bread. So immediately I'm envisioning you got your backpack, you've got your lunch bag, you've got your pencils and the heel from last night's bread? I don't know. The material in the stylus being described, though, was not lead. It was actually graphite. There was only one mine that was the source for the graphite during the 1700s, and that was at the Barrowdale Mine in England. So the story has it that in 1564, some sad shepherds were hunting for their lost flock of sheep during a bad storm, and they stumbled upon a huge deposit of pure graphite under a tree that had been struck by lightning. Inspectors came in and they decided that it must be a rare vein of plumbago, which was Latin for lead ore. So I think you can see now why we're calling it lead. Chemistry and metallurgy were just beginning, and graphite was mistakenly believed to be a form of black lead instead of crystallized carbon. So, in fact, it was graphite, not lead, which was later named by a German chemist in the 1700s. By the way, the graph in graphite is a Greek root meaning to write. So, at first, only shepherds had an interest in graphite because it was great for marking sheep. But by 1565, England was finding they needed to conserve their Borrowdale graphite since it was a non-renewable resource. And although other graphite resources have been found, none have been as pure as this Borrowdale deposit. So England started to feel the need to conserve this, especially when they discovered that graphite was a great lining for cannonball molds. In 1832, a pencil manufacturing company opened near the mine, and the popularity of the writing material grew, and by 1851, there were four companies in the area of the mines. By the end of the 1800s, the mine was nearly exhausted, so companies began mixing graphite with clay. To back up just a little bit, in 1795, France was at war with England and their pencil stock was running low. And apparently, their leader, Napoleon, had a real love of pencils. So France asked a fellow Frenchman, an army officer and inventor by the name of Nicolas Jacques Conté, to drum up a substitute. Conté was granted a patent for his formula that mixed clay and graphite. He had discovered that changing the proportion of clay to graphite changed the blackness and hardness of the pencil. The mixture was then fired in a kiln at 800 degrees, and his process is one we still use today. The US denotes the blackness and hardness with numbers, such as the number 2 pencil you have to use for any kind of test you take that's standardized, while everywhere else in the world, letters H and B are used instead. The number 1 pencils are very soft and they smudge easily. Their lines are the darkest, though. The 3s and 4s are harder, so their lines are lighter, but they also break more easily. So, just like with Goldilocks, the number 2 pencils are just right. The trouble with graphite, though, which I'm sure you're well aware of if you've ever messed around with a sharpener like so many of my students have, it leaves black residue on your hands, and it's really too soft to work with on its own. So it needs to be encased in something. We can credit a couple in Italy with developing the first wooden casing around a graphite stick. It's believed that Lindiana and Simonio Bernacotti developed this design around 1560. These early pencils, though, they resembled a carpenter's pencil, which is flat. Eventually, the process of manufacturing pencils developed into sawing 2 wooden halves, carving them out to insert the graphite stick, and then gluing them together. In America, Charles Dunbar came upon a graphite deposit in New Hampshire and started a pencil making business. Early American pencils were made from Eastern red cedar, which is a tree found in the Southeast that resists splintering. But by the early 1900s, these trees were becoming endangered, so they were replaced by the California incense cedar, which we still make our pencils from today. In 1847, Joseph Dixon opened a pencil and crucible factory in Jersey City, so he wasn't the first one to open a factory, but he was the first one to patent a wood planing machine that could produce wood for 132 pencils per minute. In 1866, he marketed his pencils as made in America so as to distinguish his pencils from those that were made in Europe. Though he did not originate the design, he was also responsible for the hexagonal shape of the wood casing. Part of this was it was easier to make the pencils. But also, if you've ever noticed, they don't roll off of your desk as easily. Dixon is credited with the birthplace of the world's first mass-produced pencils. And how timely, right? Because pencils were one of the pieces of basic equipment issued to a Union soldier during the Civil War. The Dixon Ticonderoga Company is still around, in fact, and it is the manufacturer many teachers, including this one, prefer. Each year, they produce about 1.5 billion pencils. So it's the mid-1800s, and the pencil has taken on a shape that's very much like the pencil that we use today, with the exception of one thing. People are still having to figure out how are they going to erase their mistakes, and do they really want to carry around the heel of bread with them? You can see how that might be rather frustrating. So let's take a break and a moment for our sponsors, and when we come back, let's hear about the solution. Before the break, I was talking about the Dixon Ticonderoga Company producing pencils that looked very much like the pencils we use today during the time of the Civil War. Pencils up until the mid-1800s still didn't have an eraser, and people were still carrying around a ball of bread to erase their mistakes. That is until 1858, when Hyman Lippmann patented the first pencil with a built-in eraser. Joseph Reckendorfer saw this patent as his ticket to a fortune. He bought the patent from Lippmann for $100,000, which is about $2 million in today's money. Sadly for Reckendorfer, a trip to court about 12 years later ended with a court ruling the patent invalid. He actually had taken Faber Castle to court for patent infringement, and the verdict of the court was that his own patent combined two already known patents together and therefore wasn't considered something new. So what about the yellow color of pencils? So I read two conflicting stories. The first one I read was that during the late 1800s, China was the producer of the finest graphite. Now, I already told you that the most pure graphite that I read about was in England. So already I'm kind of thinking, I'm not sure this is accurate. Pencil companies wanted their customers to know they were getting a quality pencil. So the story goes that they painted the wood yellow, which is China's color for royalty. Actually, what I read most often was that pencils were left unpainted in order to display the quality of the wood used to make the pencil. And painting of the pencils didn't really begin until the late 1800s. I found out that they started becoming common when a company in Austria-Hungary started painting theirs a shade of yellow called Koel Noor, which was named after one of the diamonds of the British crown jewels, and it happened to be the largest diamond known at that time. Either way, the color yellow is associated with quality. So, can you get lead poisoning from pencils? Pencils that we think of as a pencil has never contained lead as the medium for writing. However, lead poisoning has occurred because of lead-based paint that has been used on the wood casing of the pencils, especially if the writer were to suck on their pencil or chew on it. So I recommend that you just not. So what is that metal thingy on the end of the pencil called anyway? That part of the pencil is called a ferrule. The ferrule began to be a part of the pencil in the early 1900s in order to make the eraser more secure on the end of a pencil. They were first made of brass, and this worked great until World War II, when there were major production problems due to a shortage of metals. Innovations were already being explored before World War II, however, and new materials were being utilized, materials such as plastic and cardboard. Then in 1964, J.B. Ostrowski patented the aluminum ferrule with its ridge design, which is still in use today. I also discovered that the National Pencil Day is March 30th, which seems timely to me since it's about the time that I run out of pencils in my classroom and my students are scrambling for any that may be on the floor. So as you head out shopping, if you are purchasing back to school items, or maybe you're thinking about donating some to a school near you, please consider buying pencils. It seems to be the one item on the list that we just cannot seem to keep in kids' hands. Thank you, as always, for listening to this episode. And if you would like some more information about the episode, please visit my website. Or if you have an idea for a topic, drop me a line at artifactspodcast@gmail.com.